It's 6ish on Sunday night, and you're tuned to the Sharon Hour, just starting with me, Sharon James, on Laguna's KX 935. Tonight, talking about men and women and how they interact with each other. Because with all these sexual harassment suits, I have a lot of men friends that are saying, well, I'm not quite sure if I'm doing something wrong. I mean, I had one friend say, I'm a touchy-feely guy. Does that mean I have to stop doing that? And I said, of course not, but it just depends where you're touchy-feely. Don't invade someone's private parts. In the same way as you would kind of be a bit alarmed if a woman did the same to you. Now, a lot of the men say, no, I wouldn't. It would be fine. But really, there's a context. It wouldn't be fine if a woman did it to a man and that woman had not been invited to trespass on the man's parts. It would be sort of demeaning to him, or embarrassing, or as humiliating maybe as it is to most women. To be clear, we're not talking about an invitation here. We're just talking about somebody feeling it's their prerogative to just go in where angels fear to tread. I had another man tell me, I went up to this woman and pinged her bra strap, you know, just for fun, to show appreciation. Is that so terrible? And I said, don't ping women's bra straps. Yeah, it's not good. I said, if I came up to you, I'm an old lady, and pinged your jock strap, would you not be offended by that? And don't forget that when you're 20, anyone over 35 is old, and that works both ways, whether you're a woman or a man. You know, for a young man, an old man is over 35, and certainly the same applies for a young woman. Anyway, it's not even about use, it's about invading someone's private space, whether you think you're doing it flirtatiously or not. It's scary to a lot of women, and they're taught to be polite. They might smile and make light of it, but don't think that they're internally smiling and making light of it. They're just trying not to hurt your feelings, or not turn those hurt feelings into aggression against them even. And maybe that's the fault of our mums, that they taught us girls that we were supposed to just be nice all the time and smile and be gracious. Quick reminder here that you're tuned to the Sharon Hour on Laguna's KX935. I'm Sharon James, and I'm talking men and women tonight, particularly this climate of sexual harassment going on. This permissiveness with boys, that boys will be boys and will turn a blind eye, maybe has to do with the way you're brought up and the expectations of the culture that you grew up in. When it takes place in a professional arena, it's about power, usually, not about libido. Even in a personal arena, as we all know, aggressive sexual advances are usually more about power or feeling that you have to assert your power. Aggressiveness in any form is about that, whether it takes a sexual manifestation or not. But it's when a powerful person makes a less powerful person perform in a way that they would not normally be willing to, that it becomes very troublesome. And if you think of it, really, men have historically had the upper hand in the business world, much less so now, of course, but certain professions are very male-dominated still. So it's when the person in a position of power abuses that power and uses their own sexual needs to do that just to serve themselves and not the job they're being paid to do, that it's black and white wrong. And of course, there are degrees. And unfortunately, when a pat on the knee is equated with sexual penetration, that becomes insane. And a sort of mob mentality about this stuff tends to diffuse the real problem. And I'm hoping that doesn't happen with these sexual harassment suits. It also threatens just the everyday harmless interactions between men and women. When anything tactile, a touch on the knee, a touch on the arm, a touch on the back, is put into a sexual context, that just makes men and women uncomfortable with each other. And that's not right either. And there are some professions where men and women are equal, and this doesn't arise. But in Hollywood, for instance, which is what started this whole thing, the Harvey Weinstein stuff, the casting couch has been a syndrome for decades. And there, men really have taken advantage of women. Now, many may say, well, the women use it themselves. They use their sexuality to get ahead. So what do they expect? They dress sexily, or they flirt too much, or they offer themselves to men. Well, yes, there are consensual arrangements in every profession. You scratch my back, literally, I'll scratch yours. But we're talking about non-consensual. We're talking about where people are excluded because they won't comply sexually. I mean, how many stories do you hear about actors not getting roles if they won't strip when the part doesn't even call for that, or they won't, as we've heard, go into a hotel room and do what's required of them? And it definitely does happen. That's very, very common. Let's not pretend it's not.
My friend auditioned for a show set in like the early 20th century, and they were asked to, because there was partial nudity in the role, they were asked to send in tapes in bikinis. And you go like, hold on, in a second. Like, who's watching these? Who are we getting sent these reams of young actresses on? You know, like, is that really necessary? The stuff that actresses have to put up with and go through in the industry generally is crazy.
That was the young Harry Potter actor, Daniel Radcliffe. One actress mentions meeting with a potential agent, hoping he'd sign her. He actually offered to mentor her, but he didn't have her read. He didn't check on her education. He simply asked her to have sex with him. And when she tried to laugh it off and veer the conversation in a different direction, he remained serious. He actually said that he was engaged and he wanted his last sexual encounter before marriage to be with her. He did say that having sex wouldn't guarantee the role, but it wouldn't preclude her from getting one either. Wink, wink. But, of course, when she declined, she never heard from him again.
There is kind of like a wink and an acceptance of that type of behavior. I think a lot of Hollywood people like the fact that we work in a business that doesn't have the same rules as other businesses, and there's kind of like free to have varying personalities and stuff like that. And I think that ultimately also allows people to excuse a lot of horribly inappropriate behavior that just shouldn't be acceptable.
Interesting perspective from Seth Rogen on this KX935's Sharon Hour tonight, with me, Sharon James, talking sexual harassment stories at the moment, particularly in Hollywood. The previous actress mentioned tells about the manager who became angry when he tried to kiss her outside the theatre. She had thought he was interested in representing her, but he was only interested in kissing her. Again, when she rejected the kiss, that was a speedy end to that potential relationship.
Such a cold finger beckons you to enter his web of sin. But don't go in. Golden words he will pour in your ear, but his lies can't disguise what you feel. Kiss of death from Mr. Goldfinger. Pretty girl, beware of this heart of gold. This heart is cold. Golden words he will pour in your ear, but his lies can't disguise what you feel. Kiss of death
You're tuned to the Sharon Hour on Laguna's KX 935. I'm Sharon James, talking tonight about sexual harassment in the workplace, particularly in Hollywood. This one actress had several bad experiences with managers and agents. Yet another agent emailed her about representation, and she was very excited. And then he emailed, "So what happens when I fall in love with you?" She said her heart sank, and she just said, "Well, let's not assume that'll happen." His reply was, "I need to know you're committed." That was the end of that agent. He was actually someone hauled up on sexual harassment charges later by a different client. The debonair rom-com star Hugh Grant was asked on an English chat show what he made of all these sexual harassment stories.
Well, I don't feel inclined to be particularly sanctimonious about that sort of thing because, you know, my own past is fractionally marbled with murk. But I wouldn't say anything different to any other normal person. I think sexual harassment should not be tolerated in any form, any business, anywhere. And that's the end of it. And I admire those women who came forward on that.
Some people, Mark Ruffalo, for example, look at now saying, maybe I need to change as a man. I mean, is that where we are, do you think, now? Change the way you are in any way, or?
Well, I don't know about you, but I'm permanently trying to improve myself. And it's one of the sad realisations of being 57 is you realise, oh, I'm not going to change that much, really. One always hopes to ameliorate.
Here's the thing. There are people who are going to rise to the top, regardless if they're brilliant and or Cary Grant redux like Hugh Grant, but most of us aren't brilliant. So let's just talk about the ones that are average at their jobs. The agents, the managers, the actors, the actresses. The ones who happen to have got themselves into a position of more power are going to quelch the ones who don't have the power. They're going to deny them to the world because they didn't gratify those individuals personally. Sexually, therefore, the public at large is never going to get a look-see at them. For that reason alone, sex should be taken out of the equation when it comes to jobs, and not just in Hollywood, but anywhere where such things go unchecked. We're talking about men, women, sexual harassment in the workplace on tonight's Sharon Hour with me, Sharon James, on Laguna's KX 935. And just to be even-handed, it isn't always the men that can lord it over the women. The more women get into a position of power, they can do the same thing. Talking about Cary Grant, he got his break gratis, a powerful Hollywood woman.
I was in the office at Paramount, and they gave me a large book with a lot of photographs of different leading men, and I was sitting at a desk right near the window, and I kind of glanced out the window, and I see this good-looking guy walk across the street. So I said, this is about the best-looking thing in Hollywood. Who is he? So they looked, and they said, oh, that's Cary Grant. We haven't used him in a picture as yet, but we made tests of him with some of the starlets. I said, well, if this guy can talk, I'll take him. So they called him in, and he said, how'd you do? And I said, okay. And they said, what part? I said, the lead, of course. So he got the lead.
All you had to hear was, how do you do?
Yeah. In fact, I had him twice. I liked him so well, I had him twice.
And
then another picture. Yeah, oh, yes.
Then again, there aren't many women like Mae West. She was considered quite scandalous for being a sexual woman. In fact, for a play she wrote, people didn't realize she wasn't just a film actress. She wrote novels and screenplays and plays. She was sentenced to prison for her play titled Sex for obscenity and corrupting the morals of youth. At one point during her sentencing, the judge was said to have asked her, Miss West, are you trying to show contempt for this court? And her response was, no, Your Honor, I'm doing my very best to hide it.
I believe that everyone in life should have a mission. Making people happy is the height of my ambition. And when I get them happy, well, they stay in that condition. I have a sister all my own. I got a lot of what I got, and what I got's all mine. And I'll show you, I can show you, if you're feeling blue, come up and sing me sometime. I got a flat where you can hang your hat. I got a brand new line. Maybe you would like me to explain it all to you. Come up and see me sometime. Come up tonight. I think the paper said the moon will be bright. They should have had it in the columns and all letters by tall that you'll be falling for me. Cause I'm free and you appeal to me. How could it be a crime if you don't get my number? Well, my number's in the book. Come up and see me sometime.
So we'll never know, will we, what was required of Cary Grant for his break into Hollywood at the hands of Mae West. You're tuned to The Sharon Hour with me, Sharon James, on Laguna's KX935, talking sexual harassment in the workplace tonight, particularly when it comes to Hollywood. And it can take place at the hands of a woman. The thing is, it was very, very rare, a little less rare these days, for women to have the power. It was always in the hands of men. Also, not really in women's nature to say, you've got to sleep with me, or to rape a man. They don't generally have that inclination to force themselves sexually on someone that doesn't want them. And they don't generally have the ability to overpower men or frighten them into thinking that they may be able to overpower them. So that's the big difference. To clarify what's been going on, and we've mostly heard it from Hollywood, is about non-consensual sexual arrangements, predation, as in come have a meeting with me, but then I'm going to lock the door and make you massage me, watch me shower, and various other things that make most women without the constitution of Mae West very uncomfortable and nervous. As Ashley Judd has said, we somehow revert to that six-year-old girl who doesn't know what to do or how to conduct herself in those situations. And strange as it may seem, and unbelievable as it may seem to most men and some women, that is actually what happens. And then there are the situations where even women will come down on other women, saying, well, why did you go to his room? Why did you go to his house? And I have a story that relates to that too. It involves an actor who was on Gossip Girl, actually, and he would get his male friends basically to procure for him, and the women didn't know it. So they'd be dating a guy. They thought he was a perfectly nice guy. He'd say, come on, we're going over to my friend who's this big-time actor. He's invited us to dinner. And they'd be thrilled. How great. Love to meet him. He's really cute. They go over there for dinner. Yeah, they get drunk. He says, you know, I have 14 rooms, whatever. 5 rooms, 3 rooms. Why don't you sleep here rather than drive? You know, you're not in any condition. So the girl would go with her boyfriend to one of these spare bedrooms and collapse. And then the boyfriend would leave her there and go tell this actor that the coast was clear. And he'd go have his way with her in the bedroom while she was probably drunk and half asleep. So there are variations of colour on all of this. Yeah, silly girl for being in someone's house. But look at that situation. Why on earth should she expect to have had sex with him? So it's not sex that's the demon here. It's when an overpowering act is performed on somebody without their consent. Doesn't matter whether they're sexually active, non-sexually active. Of course, it is more damaging to someone who is non-sexually active, but it can be equally damaging to someone who is, but thinks they're in charge of their own sexuality and their own body. And for a lot of women, they don't get over that very easily. Their sense of guilt and shame is something that lives with them for a long, long time, and often something that they don't want brought into the public eye. They don't want it known by their families, their current partners, their children, and sometimes they're really frightened about the repercussions even of going and telling someone in authority that this happened, because they're frightened that this guy, the perpetrator, can come after them physically. You know, if he was aggressive enough in the first place, then he's a frightening guy. Or he can destroy their careers by telling lies about them as an act of vengeance.
When you talked about Harvey Weinstein in the business, for example, for decades, you knew that he was highly intrusive in the process of making films. Mm-hmm. You know, his nickname was Harvey Scissorhands, and he was very intrusive in the path of the directors who worked for him. Number two, you knew that he was a very intense guy and very bullying guy and was shouting and screaming at people and exhorting them when he didn't get his way. And last but not least, you heard the rumor that he raped Rose McGowan. You heard that over and over. We've heard that for decades, and nothing was done. What happened was that Rose McGowan took a payment of $100,000 and settled her case with him, and it was for Rose McGowan to prosecute that case. I don't think you and I are working at a job that everybody we work for, in terms of not just sexual crimes, racism. Do I sit there and say to myself, I want to have a forensic psychiatrist come and examine the entire board of Warner Brothers, and I will never take another paycheck again from Warner Brothers until everybody on that board of directors that runs that company has been vetted, that they're not racist, sexist, homophobic, you name it. I need to have a report on that. And the point is, you know, we all go to work and assume, we give people the benefit of the doubt. And where this thing with Harvey Weinstein and Rose McGowan came along was that she'd settled the case. And many people have asked the question. The New York Times wrote an article and said, do the settlement of these cases hurt the cause of exposing and bringing us to a place of real change? When women take money and are silenced by that money, even though they took the money and were silenced because they were told beyond the money it was the right thing for them to do, keep quiet, don't make too many waves, it's going to hurt your career. When they do it, nonetheless, does it set back the cause of change?
Okay, Alec Baldwin, all very well, but as explained, when you're frightened of someone, when you're frightened that they can destroy your career, your private life, you yourself know that in many people's eyes, you've become that dad on the end of a telephone call screaming at his daughter when you're going through a bad divorce. And that was an actual true story. How many people are brave enough to be pioneers when they're already a victim and they may not even be believed? They'll just forever be dismissed as that crazy person who brought this questionable case of rape against a very powerful man producing films that everyone loved, already thinking actresses were tarts. I mean, who wants to be painted with one color forevermore in order to what? Not necessarily protect other women, just be a footnote in a yellow paper story. The bigger issue is not you knew who Harvey was, what were you doing with him? The bigger question is, what was he doing paying $100,000 for your silence if there was something totally legitimate going on? If a woman knew for sure she was going to affect justice if she spoke out, okay, but historically, it hasn't been so, says the more enlightened George Clooney.
The idea that this predator, this assaulter, was out there silencing women like that, it's beyond infuriating.
I remember hearing a really smart woman on NPR who'd written a book about Anita Hill. For those of you who remember Anita Hill, she was the one that came out about Clarence Thomas and his unwanted sexual advances and inappropriate sexual comments in the workplace. And she was vilified. And Clarence Thomas, kind of like our current president, got to be elected to the highest court in the land, even though he had apparently lied during his confirmation process about his interest in pornography. Now, anyone can be interested in pornography in their private life. That has nothing to do with any job that they're up for, really. But he had actually been asked about it during his confirmation hearings and stated that he had no interest in pornography, where at the same time, a bunch of his fellow students at university said he was always talking about pornography and what he'd watched last night, and it was a whole thing with him. There were also two other women, other than Anita Hill, who were apparently dying to give their own stories of sexually inappropriate behaviour by him. One was even in hospital at the time, and she said, "Wheel me out in a gurney, I want to speak against him." And they actually weren't given a forum to testify. Joe Biden at the time didn't want to be seen to be racist. Ted Kennedy, who was also on the committee, of course, had his own background of inappropriate behaviour. And Clarence Thomas sailed through, and we have had 20 years of him on the Supreme Court. So, coming forward, not that easy. We've all experienced dealing with somebody who is a loose cannon, just wanting them to go away and get out of our lives. So yes, we can scoff at the Rose McGowans who took $100,000 in hush money, but consider for yourself, I rat this guy out, he comes after me, tells everybody I'm a drug addict or a sex maniac, ruins my life and my chance at a career, or I take $100,000 and I never hear from him again. I wonder what you would choose, listener. You're tuned to KX935 Sharon Hour with me, Sharon James, getting a bit political tonight. Not my usual MO, but this is a topic that hits home for us women, right? Talking about the sexual harassment that's been in all the news lately and what we're all going to do about it. So there are a lot of rules already in place. Every HR person can tell you that. I don't think it's a question of rules and laws. When it comes to Hollywood, where this kind of behaviour is rampant, I like what Jean Pruitt has to say. She's the president of the Independent Film and Television Alliance. She said, "The issue is not a lack of rules. The repeated patterns of abuse and victimisation violate employment laws, criminal statutes, and international company workplace regulations." And she adds that these non-disclosure agreements and payments indicate that the abusers understand that all too well. The abusers thrive on the persistent imbalance of economic power in the film and television industry, and that forces newcomers to the industry to accept the unacceptable in order to work. She said what we have to concentrate on is on eliminating that imbalance, so that financial and creative power over the production process is held across the spectrum of gender, race, and other differences. That should be our priority because it's the only fix for this conduct in the long run. And I concur. You know, everyone can point to the rules and why didn't use. This other woman talking about it on the same NPR show, she's a journalist, and she actually went for an interview at the Washington Post and married the guy who interviewed her, so she has a very clear vision of the difference between where sexual predilections can affect you getting the job or not getting the job. She said, you have to think that for women our age, who grew up, as Harvey Weinstein has said, in the 60s with a different cultural climate, even though she recognized herself as a very strong, powerful woman, professional woman with stature in her job, she said, for most of my professional life, I could draw the analogy of the master and the slave because it was the men who were the masters. They had the most powerful jobs and the women were sort of enslaved to their power. You know, the slave speaking up about the master wasn't going to get the proper hearing, right? So it is changing, thank goodness for it. And all of this coming up that is sort of in a frenzied state at the moment is going to be ultimately really good for our society, so long as somebody doesn't come along and take advantage of the situation and give men license to say women are crazy and sweep it under the mat again. Let's hope not. I'm Sharon James. This is The Sharon Hour, and you are tuned to Laguna's KX935. Here's another story about an actress who went willingly to Harvey Weinstein's hotel room, and she's asking herself now, why? She says she first met Harvey at the Inglourious Basterds premiere in 2009. She went as her sister's date. Her sister had just finished shooting one of the Weinstein Company's films, They were leaving the Inglourious Basterds premiere, and Harvey saw them, and he was charming. Complimented her sister's work, offered to send this woman, Caitlin, a copy of her sister's film, which was thoughtful, she thought. She gave his assistant her info and didn't think much more of it. But the next day, Harvey had left her a voicemail. She was 25 at the time and had been a struggling actress since she was 18. And she was quite chuffed that all of a sudden, after years of trying to make it to the big time, one of the biggest names in Hollywood was reaching out to her personally. She wanted to believe he was recognizing the talent he saw in her. So she called her manager for a game plan. Her manager mentioned that she'd heard stories about a few actresses who'd said they'd been sexually harassed by him. But her manager, knowing that she was the type of person to tell anyone to F off if she needed to, simply said that if she met him, she should do it in a public place. So she called Harvey back, and she says, shockingly, she found they'd developed a rapport. She said it wasn't long before he wanted to meet up to give me that screener. But he didn't say come to my hotel suite. He suggested a drink at the Montage Beverly Hills restaurant. She said, okay, as long as you don't expect me to come up to your room. She got to the lobby, and Harvey's assistant guided her to his table, and they had a nice conversation. They talked about books and movies and travel, and even a little about the pilot she was writing, and nothing else happened. She said, we stayed in touch, saw each other here and there, until another night at a Montage table when he asked her to come to his room to watch some footage because he needed help deciding which ending to go with on his film 9. He said, would you just please watch a few minutes? She said, I didn't want to go. I sort of knew what he was doing. She said, I prepared myself for this moment, but still, I went. Now, she says, the world knows what happens when Harvey Weinstein invites you to his hotel room. But as women, our careers are so different from our male counterparts. We have fewer opportunities. We don't make as much money. We're judged by our looks. We're torn apart as we age. And we're made to feel as if we have no control over time. So, sad but true, she said, women like me make the decisions, like the one I did, for so many reasons. They go into the hotel room because so many of the other doors are closed. She says, she's 33 now. And her window of opportunity is narrowing every day. Youth and beauty being prerequisites for actresses. She says, I went up to his room because I felt like I had a time bomb in my chest. I went up to his room because I was desperate and have been on some level ever since I started acting. I had struggles with my appearance, with my self-esteem, with my self-worth. And Harvey made me feel like he saw me for my intelligence and not for my body. She says, that's what breaks my heart the most about this experience. It's chilling when you believe you're being seen as an equal, and then you're putty in the hands of someone like Harvey, who'll use your vulnerabilities against you. She says, I went up to that hotel room because I've been groomed to by this world, this industry, and the expectation of an aspiring young woman that they can only achieve success with the help of a powerful man. I went up to that hotel room because it's a sad state of affairs that since the dawn of time we have few options, few opportunities, and few paths to success that don't include a man's stamp of approval. And that needs to change.
I'm sitting inside my car outside a job I've had for years now. And this is the part where I have to psych myself up and say, it's gonna be okay. I know he's in there because he's always in there. This guy controls my schedule. If I don't make any money, I don't feed my kids. And I can't say anything because I need this job. He's just gonna push and push and push and push, trying to find where my breaking point is. And the terrifying part is that I don't know where that is. So what do I do? I don't know how we fix this. I have no face in this. I have no name. You know nothing about me, but I'm still scared that he's gonna find out, or someone's gonna find out, that I've said something, and then I lose my job. And I can't lose my job.
Yeah, it's obviously disgusting and awful, and I hope that if something positive comes out of this, and, you know, I know it's weird to say thank you to people who I don't know, but, like, I would like to thank all the women that have come forward, because it is incredibly brave, and I can't imagine what that must have been like to do. Look, you don't want anyone to want to sexually harass anybody or sexually abuse anybody, and you want them to not have to quash that instinct. But hopefully, if people do have that instinct after this, they will be going like, well, I won't get away with it. I can't get away with it anymore.
To the bone. If your time to you is worth saving, then you better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone, for the times, they are changing. Come writers and critics, you prophesize with your pen, and keep your eyes wide, the chance won't come again. And don't speak too soon, for the wheel's still in spin, and there's no telling who that it's naming. For the loser now will be later to win, for the times, they are changing. I'm senators, congressmen, please heed the call. Don't stand in the doorway, don't block up the hall, for he that gets hurt will be he who has stalled. For the battle outside raging will soon shake your windows and rattle your walls, for the times, they are changing. Our mothers and fathers throughout the land, and don't criticize what you can't understand. Your sons and your daughters are beyond your command. Your old road is rapidly aging. Please get out of the new one if you can't lend your hand, for the times, they are changing. The line it is drawn and the curse it is cast. The slowest one now will later be fast, as the present now will later be past. The order is rapidly fading, and the first one now will later be last, for the time.
You're tuned to the Sharon Hour with me, Sharon James, on Laguna's KX935. And I'm talking about the Battle of the Sexes tonight, given all the sexual harassment charges that are going on, that it's sort of about time they did come to light. I know everyone dismisses these Hollywood tales as, well, that's Hollywood. But it isn't always just Hollywood. It can be in any arena where one sex has more power than the other, and commonly, in recent history, it's been the men who've had the power. And if they've used it for their own sexual gratification, it's good that that's exposed, as it were. In The Hollywood Reporter recently, Jenny Lumet, who's the very pretty daughter of Sidney Lumet, the film director, and a film scriptwriter in her own right, she wrote Rachel Getting Married, tells of a sexual assault by a music mogul whom all of us know. No real reason to mention his name at this point. I'm sure he's going to have to pay the piper if her account holds sway. But here's what she said happened. And this is, I think, a particularly important case because it shows that things aren't always black and white. It's not always the really bad guy and the really good girl. It can be a good guy who acts badly, or a bad girl who acts in self-interest, or a bad girl who does the same. But when anyone overpowers someone who's less powerful than them, physically and sexually, then they need to be held accountable, right? It just makes it more difficult when it's someone who you didn't realize was predatory and you had no prior warning of it, which was her case. She explained that she knew this man for years, just to nod at. She'd see him at a nightclub that they both went to. They had a lot of mutual friends. She found him charming and funny and charismatic and self-deprecating. He was a fan of Lena Horne, who is Jenny Lumet's grandmother. She said he sort of pursued her, just lightly, over the years, and she politely rebuffed him. She didn't imagine it went very deep. But then there was a night in the early 90s when she was 24 and worked at a restaurant called Indochine, somewhere she'd worked since she was 17 as a coat check girl. He came into the restaurant and he had a car and driver and he offered her a ride home. She said sure. She'd been in vans and cars with him before, surrounded by crew members while they were making a movie, and she really thought he was offering her a ride home. There was no mention of, I want to have sex with you, or I want to go home with you. Anyway, she gets into the car that she remembers as an SUV. His driver starts off. She presumed he knew where she lived because some years ago he'd sent her 250 balloons for her birthday. But still, as soon as she gave the driver her address, 19th Street and 2nd Avenue in New York City, he turned to the driver and said, no, no. She said, what do you mean, no? It's 19th Street. And again he said no to the driver. And then the car doors locked. She said she didn't even recognize the man she was with at that moment. But she couldn't open the doors. She couldn't open the windows. She was in a moving car. And the driver didn't stop. He didn't take her to 19th Street and her apartment. He took her to the man's apartment. She said, I didn't try to kick the windows out. I didn't punch. I didn't say, what are you doing? She said, I didn't say anything. She said all she could feel was dread. She did say she wanted to go home, but she was scared the situation could turn violent. She remembers feeling inside her that she must have been crazy to have let him suggest to take her home. She was just praying that the person she knew for those years would suddenly return instead of this po-faced man in front of her. She said the car stopped. She doesn't even know where. She remembers the driver opening the door from outside. This man was behind her. She was between the two of them. The driver looked unreadable. It was just her and these two scary-seeming men. She said all she could think of was to keep both of them calm. She says in retrospect, was there a place and time I could have run? I have no idea. Would somebody else have run? Again, no idea. All she knew was that she was standing between two men, one of whom who obeyed the other, and she was scared. She says there was no well-lit lobby ahead of her or a doorman at the building. She remembers a street-level door opening into a small elevator. She said nobody dragged her, punched her, or verbally threatened her, but she was maneuvered into the elevator, and then the man pressed himself against her, with his body, his hands, and his mouth. And there she was, alone with him in the elevator. She was maneuvered into his apartment, into his bedroom. She said, wait. He said nothing. She said, all she could think of was just keep him calm, do what you need to do, and then you'll get home. She said, so I made the trade. I did what I was told. She said, when it was over, she grabbed her clothes and went down in the elevator on her own. He didn't try to stop her. She went home in a taxi. She didn't tell anyone this story until October 27th of this year, after the Harvey Weinstein story broke. This man has since been quoted as saying, abusing women in any way, shape, or form violates the very core of my being. She says, we encountered each other socially many times after that night. We may have even been photographed close to each other or even together. She never sought him out, but she didn't run on seeing him either. She said she strove for an affect of normalcy. She never said anything to him about that night, and he never said anything to her. You just heard Jenny Lumet, daughter of film director Sidney Lumet, talking about being raped by a famous music mogul whom she'd always considered a decent sort, a friend, at least an acquaintance. This is just one of the stories I'm telling about sexual harassment in Hollywood on tonight's KX935 Sharon Hour with me, Sharon James. Jenny Lumet says, various women have spoken out against him since. She says, maybe me recalling this incident and writing it down can be helpful. I don't know. She says, in the past quarter of a century, she's built herself a reputation in this industry. She doesn't really need anyone to have this visualization of her that she's just exposed. She's liable to lose work because of it. Still, she realizes how privileged she in particular is to be able to risk that. She is aware that every mistake, thoughtless act, hypocritical or cruel act that she's committed in all of her 50 years can be excavated and everyone can see all of it. She has children. She recognizes how much guilt and shame there is and the excruciating internal reckoning this has caused her. She says, as a woman of color herself, she can't express how wrenching this is to write about a successful man of color. But she said, in this very moment, I feel a pang to protect your daughters, even if you've no inclination to protect mine. Brave woman, that. She's not exculpating herself. She's acknowledging her share of the blame. And someone will say, well, silly woman, she brought it on herself. But listen, here's the thing. Here's how we girls are brought up. Because I was sort of kidnapped once. I, by the way, being Sharon James of this KX935 Sharon Hour, talking right now about sexual predation. I was 9 years old. I was walking home alone from dancing school. My dancing school was not far away from home. I just had to walk across one street into the long street where I lived that led between Swiss Cottage in London and Hampstead Heath. I was at the top of the hill heading down and a man stopped in a car and he wound down his window and he said, can I give you a lift? And I said no, very politely, because I'd been taught to be polite. I smiled and said, thank you very much, but no, I just live down the road. He said, well, I can, you know, it's quite a walk. I can give you a lift. And I said no again. He said, well, it's only, you know, it'll save you some time. And I simply didn't know how to say no to him more than twice. It just seemed too rude. And God knows what I was thinking, but I got in the car. The minute I got in the car, he turned off the street. So he never had any intention of taking me home. We drove several blocks away. I was petrified. Even though it was my neighborhood, I had not been on those particular streets before. I had no idea where I was. And he stopped the car outside this house. I know where it is now. I've passed it since. And he said, stay here a minute. I'm just going in. And I sat in that car. Now, he went in the house. I could have gotten out of the car. But the brain fails you at those times. You are so terrified. I don't know what I thought would have happened to me if I got out of the car. I thought, well, I'll be doubly lost. He'll come chasing after me and he'll be cross. And God knows what he'll do to me then. So I understand how Jenny Lumet felt, even though she was 15 years older than me at the time. It's how we girls are brought up. I was extremely lucky because this man, who I saw in the window of this house looking down, obviously making a decision as to what to do with me, came down 10 minutes later and drove me back to the exact same spot where he picked me up. As I said, never had any intention of taking me home. And I raced home and just fell into my mother's lap. So I understand the terror you feel when you're in that position of powerlessness. And it's to do with our upbringing. Girls are brought up to not be aggressive, to be polite, to smile, to be nice. Boys aren't brought up like that. But if we girls show signs of aggression and of not being nice and of standing up for ourselves at too young of an age, we're considered shrill, aggressive, too manly, aberrations. And somehow that needs to change. And maybe it's not us girls that need to change. Maybe men should also be brought up to be nice, to not be selfish, to not be aggressive, unless the situation calls for it or they're being overpowered themselves. And if they're not brought up that way, then once they become adults and they're functioning in the professional world, they need rules by which to live, to protect them from their worst instincts, to protect everyone around them from their worst instincts. And maybe what's going on now will have some sway with that. It remains to be seen. A trainee at an agency said she was required to take her agent's mandatory online sexual harassment training for him. She said, often young female assistants like me would have to take them. As a result, these agents didn't even know what did or didn't constitute harassment. You are tuned to The Sharer now with me, Sharon James, on Laguna's KX935, talking tonight about the sexual harassment stuff. I don't usually get into this stuff, but really I think there are stories that need to be told, because I think people have to learn how to behave differently, and mothers have to teach their sons how to behave differently, because men might not know that these advances are unwelcome. They might have been taught that, oh, they'll say no, 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 but they mean yes, yes, yes. That women are always ready to be approached sexually in any manner that a man chooses. That they want it, that they're too shy to ask for it, but they love it. There are movies out that propagate that stuff. But I would say 95% of the time, if not more, it's not true. Women will be happy to let you know if your advances are welcome. And when they tell you they're not, believe them. All these Harvey Weinstein stories that are coming up, women ask each other why they weren't warned about them. They say, oh, you all knew this was going on, but you didn't tell us. Well, those women didn't really always know that it was happening to anyone but them. Myra Sorvino said only one other young woman told her about her experience with Harvey. She said Ashley Judd, she'd known for years. They did a film together after their independent Harvey incidents and never exchanged notes on it. She said it was only after she published her own story with Ronan Farrow in the New York article that Annabella Scuria called her and said, oh my God, Myra, I've known you for years, and Harvey raped me. Myra said she had no idea. She said they talked on the phone for about an hour. She said I cried for her, and eventually she also gave her story to The New Yorker. As for Myra's own story, she was still very young, in her early 20s. It was the Toronto Film Festival. She was in a film of Harvey's. She didn't want to offend him or anger him. And there he was suddenly massaging her back. She said, you're so young, you don't know how to deal with it. You don't want to offend, you don't want to anger him. You just want to try and get out of the situation as gracefully as you can. She said, it's really not fair to be blamed and shamed for it, for those kinds of situations, because that attitude only reinforces the culture of silence that empowers the predators. She said she wasn't sure about helping Ronan with the New Yorker article at first. She was nervous about using her name, that there would be retaliation and career implications. She thought she might never work again if she came out about it all. She said she went to her minister, who's female, who thought she had to go forward. So she did. But still, it was agonizing. She's been an ambassador against human trafficking for the last 8 years, but she said it's so much harder to come forward with your own voice. She said, and it wasn't even as if I was raped. I got away with not being, unlike others. But she said, I've been really afraid of him ever since. Still, she said she plastered on this false smile whenever she came across him at a public event, just trying to get past it as if everything was normal. She said her dad asked her, did you tell me not to do anything about it because you're afraid that it would get me into trouble? And she said, yes, I was afraid. Thought you'd get arrested for beating him up. Said apparently Harvey has a blacklist. People who are not supposed to be hired when they're sent to the casting people and agencies. She said, I've talked with women who are sure their careers were derailed. They've heard stories about calls being made to their agencies saying that they were drug addicts and they didn't touch drugs. Though of course, you can't say for certain that it's because of that. Still, she said she won an Oscar with Miramax. So to not continue and star in their movies doesn't make much sense. She felt if she'd accepted Harvey's advances, he would have continued to make movies with her. And for a lot of these women coming forward now, it's more on their daughters' behalves than on their own. As for Myra, she said, I'd like it to be a real free world for women, not one of fear. That's why I've been vocal. Another actress who rejected Weinstein's advances says, you don't like being thought of as a victim or other people thinking of you as weak. She said, but being a victim doesn't mean you're weak. It means that somebody did something bad to you. She said she had to come to grips with that. It was kind of like PTSD when these stories started coming out.
Most of the rumors that I knew were from Harvey himself. He would say, you know, I had an affair with this actress or that actress. And, you know, I took all of that with a grain of salt. I thought he might have been chasing them. Somebody knew. There were people that brought young actresses to his hotel room. Whoever had that story and didn't write it should be held responsible, because we should have known this. This is violating women. This is assault. This is silencing women.
Are you angry then?
I'm furious. Yeah, he's mean to work with. I knew that for a fact. But the idea that he's committed these kinds of atrocities on women, I want to know who knew.
Well, George, it's finally coming out. Unfortunately, it's that time again. We've come to the end of this Sharon Hour tonight, going into the stories of sexual harassment in Hollywood. And of course, it's not just there, it's just most rampant there, because women have historically had less opportunity to make their mark in that profession than men. But change seems more than a possibility now. So long as somebody doesn't come along and exploit this self-reckoning that's going on at the moment, it will be a good thing. A bit more transparency when the more powerful exploit the less powerful, perhaps. Time will tell. If you'd like to hear this Sharon Hour again, you can do so on iTunes, or better still, go to our kx935.com website, type in the Sharon Hour under podcasts. That's Sharon without the G, a pun on my name, Owl with the H. Meantime, this is Sharon James wishing you a wonderful holiday season. Sorry this wasn't a ho-ho-ho show, but there are plenty of others and more from me to come every Sunday night at 6:00.